Ladies and gentlemen, this is Dax Xavier Josiah, the host of ACMG Presents Talk Time Live, the podcast. You want to catch up with all of our podcast shows and hear from some of the hottest names in all of anime, comics, movies, and games, such as...
This is Miley Flanagan, the voice of Naruto.
This is Stephanie Shea, the voice of Sailor Moon.
This is Ruben Langdon, voice of Ken Masters and Dante from Devil May Cry.
Hey there, this is Kyle Abear, the voice of Ryu from Street Fighter V.
This is Chris Battle, character designer of Teen Titans Go.
Here's your chance to check out all of that and more on TalkTimeLive.com. TalkTimeLive.com provides all of our ACMG content with new and previous episodes, exclusive interviews, articles, and much more. Visit TalkTimeLive.com and let us help you learn to let go, live life, and love all things ACMG.
Talk Time Live!
This is Morgan Berry, the voice of 13 from My Hero Academia, and you're listening to ACMG Presents Talk Time Live.
It's time for your Talk Time Live exclusive.
You are now about to witness the strength of geek knowledge.
Ladies and gentlemen, I welcome back one of the first really cool guys to ever come in to Talk Time Live exclusive. He was back, believe it or not, Vic, it was probably like 2014 that you came on this show. And at the time, and it was one of the brightest things, you know, to us at the time, and I really appreciate it, and I definitely appreciate it. Now, ladies and gentlemen, this is the voice of Edward Elric from Full Metal Alchemist, the voice of Sabo from One Piece, and I believe he sung the theme song, but we'll talk about that, and as well as the upcoming Dragon Ball Super Brawly. Ladies and gentlemen, the voice of Brawly himself, Vic Mignogna. Welcome back to the show, sir.
Hello, Dax. How are you, buddy?
I am fantastic. Where are you this day?
Well, my mom lives in beautiful Ocean City, Maryland.
Ah.
And so I came up here to visit her. And so I am actually on the eastern shore of Maryland right now.
Very cool. Very cool. You still travel a lot, don't you?
I do. I do. And I enjoy traveling. I really enjoy. Well, I don't enjoy getting different places. I enjoy being different places, if you know what I mean.
Well said.
So the travel is not a ton of fun, but I really enjoy meeting fans and going to different places. And so, in fact, this weekend, I'm going to be heading down to my Star Trek studio.
Ah.
And then I've got several events coming up all over the country. Looking forward to meeting a lot of fans.
Very cool. And we'll definitely, of course, we can't have this interview without talking about Trek. So we'll definitely.
Get we to, better not.
We, yeah, right. Look, you're not beaming me anywhere with that. So we'll
you're
definitely
safe get, with me. You're safe with me.
Very
Dax.
Good. We'll get down to Trek talk, definitely. We'll say, in other words, we'll say the best for last here.
Okay.
But speaking of which, you know, I mentioned One Piece. I just started rewatching the episodes again. And I didn't notice this before, but are you the songstress for the first season?
Well, dude, first of all, I guess I wouldn't be the songstress because that would make me a female.
Yeah, forgive me, yes.
Maybe I'm a songster.
That's the thing. It's like,
but that kind of sounds like gangster. But anyway, but you know what? I've sung three of the theme songs.
Wow.
For One Piece. So not just one, but three of them.
Wow. Because I really absolutely recognize your voice now more than anything. It literally stands out now. So it's like when it catches
on. I hope that's a good thing.
Very good thing. Come on. You're the musical master
as,
here.
As opposed to, oh my lord, it's that Vic Mignogna guy again.
No, you are a musical master, and especially when it comes to anime. So.
Well, thank you. Thank you, my friend.
I have to clear that. But,
well, you know what's funny? You know what's funny, Dax, is I've been writing and producing music twice as long as I've been voice acting.
Wow.
And that's a lot of time.
Yeah,
I've been doing it for a long time. And music is one of my great loves. So when I was asked to do some singing for some theme songs, I was very excited to do that.
Awesome. Now, you also, speaking of traveling to different cons, you're going to be here in Philadelphia, reappearing in Philadelphia.
Oh, yeah, dog.
Which, by the way, this, correct me if I'm wrong, this is your second time going to be coming to Philly, right?
You know what? Don't get scared, but it's much more than my second time.
Well, that's not counting. Are you not counting Greater PA, are you?
I've been there many times, actually.
Making con appearances, or...?
Yes. I've been there years ago. I went to a show called Zenkai Con.
Yes.
And then I was at another one. I don't exactly remember the name of it, but
J1 Con probably was the one that you were referring to.
Yeah, that was probably right. That's right. And then you know what's kind of funny? For many years when I was in college, mm-hmm. I actually used to work at a studio in the Philly area, I should say.
Right.
And so I have a lot of fond memories of Philly.
Absolutely. I mean, there is a lot to endure, and they're reconstructing things now. They're rebuilding the downtown area, so I'm looking forward to seeing. Unfortunately, probably won't be by the time you get there, but. But it's going to be.
Oh, well.
It looks like a new golden age of Philly's coming.
Well, it's okay because the reason I'm coming is to meet the fans and have a fun weekend. So.
And you absolutely should. This time is going to be with Reed Pop's Keystone Comic Con, this inaugural event that's coming to Philadelphia. Is this the first time you've ever worked with Reed Pop events?
Oh no! Reed Pop is a very big convention organizer.
Yes, it is.
And I'm very honored that they've invited me. And they typically have a lot of really big guests.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm extremely honored to be a part of their show.
Well, not only that, but a friend of mine will also be a guest that you know as well, Molly Flanagan.
Oh my gosh! Sure, voice of Naruto.
Mm-hmm. She's actually a very good friend of mine. I've worked with her. We're friends to the point now that we actually had a Super Bowl bet recently.
Oh, my God.
She called me out on Twitter, and it was like, okay, all right, cheesesteak versus lobster roll is on.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
But I've also to work with her. Actually, I'm doing some stuff with her now, and Yuri Lowenthal and Tara Platt as well at the moment.
Good, so. Very good people. Good people.
Yeah, I am extremely honored to actually have the pleasure of working with all you guys, because you guys teach me about what hard work is about in art and craftsmanship. So I really appreciate it. It's an honor to even get a chance to even be near you guys or talk to you guys at this point.
It is my pleasure, my friend.
But this time around, I get to actually meet you in person, so I'm looking very forward to this.
Me too, Dax. Me too.
So you're going to see a guy with a big camera around, because I'll be covering that event too. So I'll make sure that I definitely stop by to see you and your horde of people that are probably swarming you at this point.
Well, we can hope, right? We can certainly hope.
It really is going to be a big event. Like, Repop is really going out of their way. I've seen the list and lineup, and it's insane.
Well, there are only a couple of companies that do a lot of major, have been taking over a lot of major events and making them better and better and better. And Reed Pop is one of them. And so I'm very honored. As I said, I'm very honored to be a part of it.
So we can't talk about this without talking about the big news that came this year at San Diego Comic-Con at Hall H. One of the biggest news to come was Dragon Ball Super Brawly.
Right.
We actually got the reveal because they teased it a while back. You know, they teased it, let us know that there were another movie coming. Not only was this canon to the actual show, but they didn't reveal who this person was. And lo and behold, it's Brawly. So,
yeah,
he's making a return.
Yes. Well, means, you know what? I got to tell you, Dak.
Yeah.
I've been waiting and hoping for years that our beloved Super Saiyan Brawly would come into the Prime Universe.
Right.
I've played Brawly. I don't know if you've done the math, but I've played Brawly 15 years.
Yep. Including games.
Oh, yeah. So 15 years, that's 3 movies.
Mm-hmm.
And 13 video games. Somebody at Funimation told me. 13 video games. I've been yelling Kakarot for 15 years. And I've always been wanting to, been hoping that maybe someday, you know, they would bring him into the Prime universe. Right. And I'm so excited they are. Now, I must confess to you that I don't have much to talk about at the moment.
I'm well aware because of non-disclosures and all this
stuff.
Well,
not only that, but, you know, they're still in the early stages of
the filming process,
as far as the materials,
right,
that Funimation will need in order to dub the thing into English. So
right.
I don't have much to say about it at the moment. In fact, I haven't even been I've not really had much conversation with them yet, because as I say, they're still in the midst of waiting to get all the materials. But
right.
When people ask me, "You are playing Broly, aren't you?" The only thing I can say is, I sure as hell better be.
Exactly.
Because after playing that character, I'm the only English voice of that character.
Right, right. I mean,
so
like
after playing
start
that
to
character
finish.
All of these years, I certainly would hope and pray that there wouldn't be any reason why I wouldn't do it. So.
And all of a sudden, Jason Alexander plays it.
Well, let's see what the fans think of Jason Alexander as Broly.
Seinfeld's rendition of Broly.
Oh, yeah. Love it.
But no, I mean, it is absolutely awesome that they're focusing on him, that he's finally in the Prime Universe. I'm glad you said Prime Universe and not canon, because I swear people use that word to sound really pretentious sometime.
I'm just excited, like I said, excited that he's part of it, because I, even though the character was hard on the voice, I love the character.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I mean, I love being a part of DBZ.
Right, right.
And and so even though the character itself, you know, even though the voice is pretty, you know, taxing.
Yeah.
I love the character, and I'm excited to be a part of it.
Let me ask you, how many hours in the studio, in the booth? Because I'm pretty sure you had to do different renditions of saying Cockrod, and, you know, you did get some lines in some of the movies.
Well, in the very first movie, in movie number 8,
yeah,
he actually talked. He actually formed sentences.
Right.
And then, you know, after 8, you know, he went into like 10 and 11, and he just got more and more just, you know,
Paleolithic
yelling Kakarot and fighting. He didn't talk much.
Right.
But it's always funny. Every time I do a new video game.
Yeah.
And I go into the studio, and it's like always the same lines. It's like, you know, "I will destroy you, Kakarot. You're a bug. I'm going to squash you. Kakarot, Kakarot, Kakarot. Kakarot." And I always kind of chuckle, because I think to myself, man, like, I've probably said Kakarot 1,000 times now. Like, how many different ways can you say that one word?
Before
and
I am.
I always. Somebody told me one time, I don't know if it's true or not, but somebody told me that there's one of the video games that if you hold a certain sequence of buttons down, you hear all the Kakarots one after another.
Oh, God.
Which I think is adorable.
I mean, how does it feel? I mean, you say that, you know, that his character, whether be it simplistic or not, this character is a very cherished cult character of the DBZ universe.
Yeah, he is.
I mean, how does it feel?
Is.
How do you feel that having a character that you did almost so little with it, but it has so much of the fans' attention after all these years, and still.
Oh, I'm. What can I tell you? My answer is going to be exactly what you expect it to be. I'm extremely grateful. I'm extremely grateful that there is such a love for that character.
Right.
Extremely grateful. I love the role. Mm-hmm. I'm honored to have gotten the chance to play the roles, you know, for so long.
Right.
And, you know, I'm, like I said, I'm so very excited that the character is, you know, that the character is so beloved and that he's going to be coming back. I mean, that's all I can tell you is, you know, people right. and people, a lot of people have said to me, wow, man, are you ready for, you know, you always talk about how much it hurts your voice. And I'm like, well, yeah, that's true, but that's the job.
Right.
I mean, if I have to yell and be and scream and be hoarse for a week or two, then that's the job. I'm happy to do it.
Now, I've talked with other, you know, actors as well. Kyle Hebert, especially, like, he has a way of fixing that. Do you have a certain method of how you, you know, work out your voice throughout the time within a few hours of booth time?
You know what? No. Maybe I should call Kyle.
I think you should call Kyle because then at this point, I can guarantee you should talk to Kyle because he has an absolute way of preserving your voice throughout the time.
Well, you know what? I'm going to call. I will call Kyle. I promise you that.
Yeah.
But let me just say this. Different people's voices are different.
Mm-hmm.
There are some people that can yell and scream like a madman for hours.
Right.
And the next day, their voice is just fine. And then there are some people who can yell and scream for hours, and the next day, and for the next week,
mm-hmm.
you know, they're struggling. You know right. what I mean? Their voice is shot, and they need a little downtime. Right. And I am one of those people.
Right.
Now, I don't, you know, like I said, that's the job. And if that's what I need to do, then that's what I'll do. But, you know, Kyle may be just one of those guys who is lucky enough to. And you know what? I don't know how much yelling Kyle has to do, but I know that not many people have to scream as much as Broly does.
No, maybe not as much.
Maybe, right. maybe they do it as much, but right. you know, he's just crazy.
Like, right.
you don't really get any downtime.
No subtlety to it.
It's exactly. Just, yeah. Exactly. It's just full on all the time, which, like I said, I'm fine with it. That's what it is. That's what it is. And right. I'm very honored to be a part of DBZ.
I can definitely vouch for you that Gohan has a sensu bead that will be great for you. Go on the
long
run. Well,
as soon as I get off the phone with you, I'll be calling. Kyle, give me your secret.
And he got it from somebody else too, apparently. So, I mean, it's a passed on secret, you know.
Okay.
But let's switch some gears real quick in anime, and let's go from, you know, Dragon Ball to Full Metal. Because I just finished watching on Netflix the live action Netflix quote unquote original Warner Brothers Japan live action version of Full Metal Alchemist, which I just discovered that you did the voice of. Now, here's the funny thing about this, Vic. When it first came out on Netflix, your voice was not in this and there was no option for it. All of a sudden, I watched the entire thing in its original content and subtitle. All of a sudden, I watched it again and lo and behold, you are there. So when did that come about?
Well, quite honestly, you know, they made the movie in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And then at some point in time, I don't even remember, maybe a month or so
mm-hmm.
after it was released in Japanese.
Yeah.
They contacted me and because they were going to be doing an English dub.
Right.
So I was in it, and I don't know if you noticed, but Aaron Dismuke, who played my brother in the original Full Metal, was
not
in it.
There.
No, he was in it.
Wait, but he wasn't Alphonse, was he?
Yes, he surely was.
I was looking at IMDb to see if it was, because he sound. I mean, you guys had to do a different approach of it, so it didn't sound like the original Alphonse from.
No, it wasn't the original. It didn't sound like the original Alphonse because right. Aaron was 12 when he played Alphonse.
Oh.
And he sounded like a very tiny little boy. But as you noticed, as I'm sure you probably noticed in the movie, Alphonse was a little older.
Yes.
And so the people that dubbed it thought, well, this is an opportunity for us to have the original voice actor do Al again. And so they've got Aaron doing Al, and they've got Caitlin doing Winry.
Yes.
Which is wonderful.
I really appreciated the love that they brought into the voice acting and the respect that they gave you guys by bringing you back, and the fans who really appreciated your work in there.
Well, me too. Me too. I think that if they wanted to appeal to people that loved Full Metal Alchemist, if they wanted to appeal to them with the live action, the thing to do was definitely to use some of the original, as many of the originals as they wanted, as they were able to.
Because they could have went any other way with this, and they could have went a whole other direction. And the fact that they didn't, I really appreciate what they did with that. And you guys did a really, really good job with this.
Thank you. Thank you for that, my friend.
And I tell you this from a standpoint, because you guys had a different approach with it, and this is a live action as opposed to anime, the actual animation version. So the mannerisms are quite different there. You know, with that said, well, first of all, is this the first time that you ever worked ADR for a live action film?
Oh, no. Goodness, no.
So you were well prepared for this.
Goodness, no. Yes, I've done tons of live action dubbing over the years. Mm-hmm. Everything from Godzilla movies to everything from monster movies to just Japanese dramatic movies and horror films. And I mean, you name it. Yeah, I've done a lot.
So how did you go about playing Edward this time around? Because, like I said, this is a live-action version. There's different mannerisms going on. And I love the subtlety that you gave him on this one, by the way, too, because it fit the timing of the voices and the mouth movement really well. And the second time around with the dub, I felt that it was a lot more enjoyable. Because I see what you guys were attempting to do, and it felt like it was successful. So, you know, how did you approach it this time?
Well, I will tell you this: live action, dubbing live action is always a little more difficult because the characters are real and they're actually forming real words.
Right.
You know what I mean by that?
Right. Absolutely.
So it's always different to do live action than it is to do anime. In fact, a lot of times you'll even rewrite a line based on the mouth shape of the actor, because if he ends on a U sound, you don't want to end on an A word. You want to rewrite the line so that you're saying the same thing,
right?
But you're finding words that have vowels and plosives and consonants that match as close as possible what the original actor is doing.
Right.
That's not something you ever have to worry about. Well, that's not something you often have to worry about with anime.
Right.
Usually anime, the mouth is open or mouth is closed, and you can do just about anything within those mouth flaps. Occasionally there will be a big open mouth flap or an oo-shaped flap.
Right.
But for the most part, anime is much easier to dub because the mouth is either open or closed. But in live action, where they're actually forming words and you can see very clearly that they're forming words, it's a little more time intensive to pay attention to the shapes of the mouth and what they're doing.
Right. And I got that from just looking at it and paying attention to the actual mouth movements of the actor, you know, playing your role, playing the role that you were voicing again. And I like I said, I feel like you guys did a really good job, because I could tell that if people don't understand how not easy that probably was, that
dubbing live action is very different.
Yeah. But nonetheless, much appreciative with that on that, and great job on all the cast. And I'm glad, again, shout out to Netflix for bringing you guys back. And of course, it would have made no sense for them not to bring you guys back, but they have all the other episodes on there too.
Right.
So I want to switch gears again, because I actually just saw something really cool. For 12 minutes of my life was entertained, and that was the Deadpool musical 2 that you were involved in, playing the role as Beast in Captain America. Talk about that real quick, and How much fun did you guys did you have doing that?
Well, I had a lot of fun doing it. I have a very dear friend who actually, and I'm going to tell you the whole story. So, Dax, I hope you don't mind, but I'm going to tell you where that came from.
Go for it.
There's a guy named Michael Parker.
Mm-hmm.
He is a really nice guy. He's an entrepreneur. He lives in the up in the Bay Area, San Francisco area. And when we were raising money for my Star Trek series,
mm-hmm.
he donated to our Star Trek series.
Hmm.
And then in one of his donations, he came – what his perk was that he came down to the studio to do a walk-on.
Oh, wow.
For the episode.
Right.
When he came down to our studio, he was so inspired by what we were doing
mm-hmm.
with all of these volunteers, and basically that I was making my childhood dream come true, that he literally went home and thought about how much he loved Deadpool and how much he was able to imitate Ryan Reynolds' mm-hmm. voice.
Yes, he did.
And then he had a really, really high-end custom-made Deadpool suit made for himself. And after he did that, he thought, you know what? I want to do with Deadpool what Vic did with Star Trek. And he actually wanted me to be a part of the first Deadpool musical.
Right.
The guy that directed it was a guy that he met at our Star Trek production,
oh, wow.
Julian Higgins, and some of the other staff and production people that made the first Deadpool musical were people that he met at our Star Trek production as well. And he right. wanted me to be a part of the first one, but unfortunately, as it worked out, I was unavailable. We were actually shooting episode 9. We were shooting episode 9 of my Star Trek series during the weekend that they shot the first Deadpool musical.
Wow.
So he promised me that if he ever made another one, I would definitely be a part of it. So fast forward a year or two, and he decided to make one more. Julian Higgins was back directing. Lisa Hansel was back doing makeup, my Star Trek people. And he called me and said, okay, a lot of the Avengers are going to be in this one. Who do you want to play? And some of my friends were encouraging me to play Tony Stark.
Right.
He said, who's your favorite superhero?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, I love America. I'm a proud American, so I'm going to go with Captain America.
And you fit that role really well. You fit into that suit really well, by the way.
Thank you, my friend. Thank you. Thank you. So that's how that came about.
But you played Beast too, correct?
Well, I did the voice of the Beast.
Oh, interesting.
I did the voice of the Beast in the singing.
Interesting.
Because the guy that sang, the guy that played the Beast in the movie, or in the, you know, in the film,
yeah.
was not much of a singer.
But he was an acrobatic type of guy.
Oh, yes, he was.
I was wondering, like, wait, no.
Exactly. See, they needed somebody who could do that a lot
right.
more than they needed somebody who could sing one or two lines in the song. So right. I just channeled my best Kelsey Grammer kind of a Beast voice, and it worked out okay, I guess.
And Omar Stars and Gathers, you did it.
Thank you.
No, it was a really great. I was really entertained by that, and when I saw that in your credits, I was like, okay, I went Liz Lemon on me and I on you, and I was like, I would like to go to there, and I went there, checked it out, and was highly entertained by it. So,
it was a lot of fun to do. A lot of fun.
All right, my friend, it's Trek time. So.
Talk to me, baby.
In November of 2017, you finished your passion production of Star Trek Continues, and congratulations and great job on that. And I got to say, it was an amazing production that you guys did. And so, I mean, straight to the point, accurate with the 4.43 ratio, which I don't think is in any other YouTube video that you guys have it at 4.3, aspect ratio, with the resolution. It's so old school. It was right to the boat. I absolutely enjoyed it. But your overall, how about your overall experience with that investment? What do you, you know, what do you take from that after all that?
Well, I don't think you have enough time to talk about this. You know, all I can tell you is I am so enormously proud of what we did. You know, I've seen a lot of fan productions out there.
Yeah.
There are a lot of Star Trek, well, every different pop culture thing. Mm-hmm. People make fan films, Star Wars, you know, Doctor Who, Battlestar Galactica, on and on it goes. But for me, there are a lot of Star Trek fan productions out there.
Right.
And I've actually even been involved with some of them.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing that I noticed in all of these other fan productions was basically that, you know, they just they were great people,
mm-hmm.
but they didn't have the requisite skills necessary to really make something at a really high level of quality.
Right.
And it's not personal. I mean, this is not an offense. This is not an insult.
Right.
You know, I've told people a lot of times, if you look at me and go, Vic, you're not a basketball player, I wouldn't be like, well, shut up, you jerk. No. You know why? Because I'm not a basketball player.
Exactly.
And I know it.
Right.
I know what my strengths are and I know what my weaknesses are.
Right.
And you know, to a lot of these fan films, they're fans. They're enthusiastic fans, mm-hmm. but they're not actors.
Right.
And they're not directors, and they're not cameramen, and they're not lighting people,
mm-hmm.
and they're not story writers. They're not script writers.
Right.
They're not makeup professionals. They're not sound professionals or editing professionals,
mm-hmm.
or special effect professionals or set build. I mean, there are hundreds of things that go into making a production of quality. And God bless these people. I mean, I love them, and I wish them well.
Passionate bunch.
But as I was involved in these other productions, I thought, man, this could be done so much better.
Right.
If somebody were to bring it together, a bunch of people who just loved Star Trek, but they also were actors,
right,
or cameramen or production professionals. And so my intention was to make the best Star Trek episode I could, the way I remembered Star Trek. And so that's what I did. And I brought together a bunch of my friends,
mm-hmm.
and we made an episode. And then we released it, and people really enjoyed it. So we launched a crowdfunding campaign to make more.
Right. And was it your decision to actually end on 11, or was it always meant to be?
Well,
11 episodes,
I had always wanted. I'll be honest with you. I had always wanted to make more.
Right.
But I wanted to make 13. Maybe 15.
Right.
But there were some things that happened,
mm-hmm.
Related to fan productions, and I really don't want to go into it.
Understood.
But suffice it to say, there was another fan production that raised a bunch of money,
mm-hmm.
under the Star Trek name.
Right.
And then they proceeded to pocket a lot of that money and waste a lot of that money.
Right.
But did not make the project that they raised the money to make.
Yeesh.
And so CBS was forced to take action.
Oh, wow.
And they did. And other fan productions, for lack of a better term, were collateral damage.
Right.
The good news is, though, that my original intention was always to finish the original series of Star Trek.
Right.
Whether it was in 11 episodes or 13 episodes,
mm-hmm.
or 15 episodes, my goal was always to do what had never been done.
Right.
And that was finish the 5-year mission of the Enterprise. return the ship to Earth.
Right.
And tell a story that explains where everyone was when the motion picture was released in the late 70s.
Right.
You remember in Star Trek The Motion Picture, from the very beginning, Captain Kirk was an admiral at Starfleet.
Absolutely, you're right.
But nobody ever explained when or why he left the captaincy and took a promotion.
Right.
And at the beginning of the motion picture, Spock was on Vulcan.
Mm-hmm.
Pursuing this this culinar discipline to purge all remaining emotion. But nobody ever explained why Spock was on Vulcan and what were the events that led up to him doing that.
Right.
And so my goal was, wouldn't it be historical and iconic to finish and bring to a close and completion what is arguably the most iconic television series in history.
Right.
So that's what we did. And I got to tell you, I am extremely proud of what our people did.
As am I, and I'm sure your fans as well, because and it is great because the fact that your career is not solely based on what you do behind the mic, but is also what you do behind a camera or in front of a camera, and it gives you that, you know, almost Renaissance type of feel that you have, and it's a great thing to have, and it also helps that you are just one of the nicest guys in the world.
Well, thank you for that.
That makes it even more.
Thank you for that.
Yeah.
No, well, you know what? Let me say something. Most voice actors that you know.
Yeah.
With very few exceptions, most voice actors are actors.
Yes.
They didn't start out to be voice actors, and they don't limit their acting to voice acting.
Correct.
They've studied theater and stage and screen acting. Acting was their passion, as was mine. I had been acting on stage and whenever I could do any on-camera acting for decades before somebody said to me, "Hey, you've got a lot of acting experience, don't you? Right. You should go and audition for this place in town that dubs anime. They're looking for actors." So I say that to say that I am not alone in the fact that I look for many opportunities to express my love and passion for acting.
Right.
Most all of the other voice actors I know have extensive experience as actors.
Right.
In fact, even in my Star Trek series, I've got Chuck Huber playing Dr. McCoy, very, very gifted voice actor and actor. Todd Haberkorn, great actor, and was acting long before he was voice acting. Elizabeth Maxwell, voice actress, who I brought in to play a guest role in episode 9.
Right.
Lex Lang, Sandy Fox, a couple that are well known as voice actors. I brought them in to play roles on my show. So there are a lot of voice actors, most of them, who are actors first and have done lots of different kinds of acting.
But I think I'm glad that you brought that up too, because that's what I learned. That's one of the respectful things that I've learned from doing all these interviews with you, with all the talented people that I have, was that I think we need to condition our minds, us as fans, maybe condition ourselves to just, you know, consider you guys actors in general.
Exactly.
Because it is, and I've been to San Diego Comic-Con, I've been to panels before, and I've heard Tara Strong and mention, like, in a dress that we are actors no matter what we do, and it is, and it's absolutely true. It just, it feels like such a contrast in a sense, but it's really not.
No, it's not. And you know, every time somebody says to me, you know, "When did you decide you wanted to be an actor?"
Right.
And I would often say, well, nobody ever really excuse me. I'm sorry. Let me start again. Many fans will say, "When did you decide you wanted to be a voice actor?"
Right.
And a lot of people, you know, including my peers in voice acting would say, "Well, no, there was never really, I want to be a voice actor."
Right.
It was never about voice acting. It was about acting.
Right.
And that's what we love. And that's what we're doing. The only thing is, somebody somewhere along the way gave us an opportunity to audition as a voice actor.
Right.
And so that's why we're voice acting.
And
none of us ever started out, you know, "Oh, I want to be a voice actor."
Right.
No, it was, "I want to be an actor."
Right.
And somewhere along the way, somebody offered us an opportunity to voice act. And so that's why we're voice actors.
Very well said. As far as any other projects that you have in mind, have you thought about doing a new project, you know, like you did with Continues?
Well, I'll tell you what, man. Many people have asked me that.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure.
And I have to tell them this. There are not many things in my life that inspire me the way Star Trek did.
Right.
I mean, my love for Star Trek, bro, is a childhood love.
Right.
There is nothing that inspired me when I was a little kid in quite the same way as Star Trek did. And that's why I made Star Trek Continues. And I've had a lot of people ask me, you know, what's next? What are you going to do next? And I'm like, well, you know what? As soon as I find something that thrills and inspires me the way Star Trek did,
right,
I'll do it. There are not a lot of things that do.
Well, it really sounds like that. This is your way of giving back and paying homage to what kind of brought you the passion that you have today.
Exactly. In fact, I'll tell you something, Dax. A lot of the things that I do professionally today,
yeah,
I tried for the first time,
right,
as a complete novice because of Star Trek.
Right.
Why did I start going to school and auditioning for school plays and trying to get involved in acting? I'll tell you. Because of Star Trek.
Right.
And William Shatner and Leonard Nimoy and the actors that made that show. They inspired me, and I thought to myself, I want to do what they're doing.
Right.
And so I went to high school and went back to high school after watching Star Trek and started auditioning for school plays and then community theater. And why did I make little home movies when I was a little boy, and why did I, you know, make uniforms, get my mom's sewing machine and make uniforms and build props in my bedroom and round up the kids in the neighborhood to make Star Trek episodes. And I would direct them and shoot them and make little special effects of the ship flying by because of Star Trek.
Right.
So now, all these decades later, I went to college and got a degree in filmmaking.
Right.
And it was inspired by Star Trek. So a lot of the things that I do professionally now, I was inspired to try for the first time because of Star Trek. So Star Trek Continues is kind of a full circle, completion of something that I started as a 10 or 12 year old kid.
But not only that, the fact that you got to do it your way and yourself, that has to be liberating.
It is. It very much is. And I will tell you also that I only intended to make one episode.
Right.
I didn't know how people would react to it. Whether they would like it. I just wanted to make it.
Right.
For myself, to say that I did. And I didn't know how it would be received. And I am beyond grateful that so many people have enjoyed it the way they have. I mean, somebody told me the other day that we're approaching 10 million combined views.
Wow.
That's just unbelievable. I wanted to make one episode.
Right.
The way that I remember Star Trek. I wanted to make an episode that moved, you know, that told a story and that moved people the way the original series moved me.
Right.
So I paid for the first episode. I made it with my, you know, with my own money.
Right.
I flew everyone down to the studio. I bought them hotel rooms. All of it with my own savings because I loved the original series. And I thought, well, I shouldn't ask people to give me money for something that they don't know whether I could do or not.
Right.
Maybe this is a perfect case of putting your money where your mouth is.
Right.
And so that's exactly what I did. And we released the first episode and so many people really enjoyed it,
right,
that we launched a crowdfunding campaign to make more.
Right. And to me, you know, with that said, you invested in everybody's ability. Their passion, I'm sure, was payment enough.
Oh my gosh. You know what? I've often told people are like, would you make more if you could? And I would say, yeah, I would certainly make more if I could.
Right.
But I will tell you this, if I ever make more and bring my team back together to make more,
yeah,
I'm going to pay them.
Right.
I'm going to raise enough money to compensate people for the amazing work that they do.
Because they've proven it.
I would never ask these people to come back and do more. Mm-hmm. For nothing. Right. They gave of their time and their talents and their efforts 11 times over.
No slacking, none of that stuff.
Oh my gosh, no. In fact, I'll tell you something. You know what, Dax? You could go and look at a number of look at any other fan film.
Right.
Look at any other fan film.
Right.
And the first thing you will note is nobody made 11 full-length episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Number one. Number two, if they even came close to that, you would find that they had four different people playing the same role,
right,
over the course of their series. They had people, new people in new positions almost every episode.
Mm.
Do you know why? Because you can't count on people to give you – you can't expect people – to give of their time and efforts for free.
Trust me.
Over and over and over again.
Trust me. I can tell you, it's a lesson I've learned over the time.
Exactly. Exactly. Sure, they'll come and play Star Trek with you one time.
Mm-hmm.
But after you ask them to come back again, they're like, yeah, you know what? I did it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I did it. I'm not going to take another 10 days off of work. I'm not going to take another 10 days without pay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to take another 10 days away from my family,
right,
to do this again. So that happens with fan productions, and it's completely expected.
Right.
But now consider that these people for Star Trek Continues did it 11 times.
Right.
With very, very few exceptions, we had exactly the same cast and crew,
mm-hmm,
every episode. And that is extraordinary.
Speaks major volumes. Absolutely.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, Vic, thank you so much for being on the show. I got one more question, but I'm extremely,
sure, man,
am humbled at the fact that you're back here, and I really appreciate your time.
My pleasure.
I mean, just one more question to sum it all up. I mean, if you sum up everything that you've done throughout the years, if you maybe a one-word association, or maybe, or you know, what would you give it?
It would probably be it would probably be a tie between two words.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is gratitude.
Mm.
There is nothing special about me.
Mm-hmm.
I was very fortunate to be in a particular place at a particular time, and had developed a particular set of skills. And because of that, I got an opportunity to play Vega in Street Fighter II.
Mm-hmm.
And that led to another show and another show and another show. And now 20 years later, and 300 projects later, gratitude would be a big one-word sum up. The other word that is would be a tie with gratitude is humility.
Wow.
I am so humbled that people enjoy my work. I will never cease to be humbled and honored when fans come up to me at a convention and say, you are my William Shatner. You know, you have created characters that have inspired me, or helped me through a difficult time,
right,
or brought me back together with my brother or sister, or gave me the courage to move forward, or, you know, help give me strength to get through an illness. I mean, any number of a hundred different things that fans have said over the years, and
right,
all I can do is sit there and thank God and be so humbled that I had the opportunity to do what I've been able to do. And I there's nothing special about me. I just had this opportunity, and I thank God for it every day. I'm so grateful and so humbled that the fans have been so encouraging and so supportive over the years. And if there's one thing I could say to the fans, it is thank you. You will never know how much your kindness and support of my work has meant to me over the years. And I think one of the reasons that I do as many events as I do is because I want to connect with them and be able to look them in the face and you know, and put my arms around them and thank them for how much their support and enthusiasm for my work has meant to me.
What better way to end it than on that note? That's true Captain America, ladies and gentlemen. Now, with that said, before we end this show, is just one more thing you got to do in your career. You're Captain James T. Kirk. You got to go to Las Vegas and sing Rocket Man. That's all I'm going to say. It's pretty much a done deal. You got to do it.
Well, I
get your tuxedo.
Think it's going to be a long, long time till touchdown brings me back. I get to fly. I don't know what kind of man they think I am. No, nobody can touch Bill Shatner. No. He's the man. He's the king.
God bless him for that, and God bless you, good sir. Thank you so
much. Thank you, sir. Thank you. I look forward to seeing you at Keystone Comic Con.
Absolutely. That is without a doubt going to happen. I'm looking very much forward. Ladies and gentlemen, the one and only Vic Mignogna on the show. Let us know where you're at next. Let us know where we can follow you in all things Vic Mignogna right now.
Well, I'll tell you what. You can go to my fan club website, www.risimboolrangers.com. That's R-I-S-E-M-B-O-O-L. Risimbool, that's the little town that Ed and Al came from in Full Metal. Awesome. Risimboolrangers.com. And right there, you can see my convention schedule. I've got dozens of shows still lined up this year, and I'm going to be all over the place, and I would love to meet as many of your listeners as possible. So please come out and say hello, and I would love to see you.
That is no doubt. ACMG will represent Philadelphia and Keystone Comic Con, and definitely head over to see you as well. Guaranteed that.
Thank you, my friend.
So thank you again. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been a Talk Time Live exclusive with myself and the one and only Vic Mignogna. Thank you so very much for listening. Vic, again, thank you so much. I am extremely as humble as you are to have you here as well. Grateful times and a great time to be a fan as well. So ladies and gentlemen, with that said, on behalf of myself and Vic, all I got to say is learn to let go, live life, and of course, love all things anime, comics, movies, and games. This is ACMG Presents Talk Time Live. We are out of here. We'll see you in September.
This episode of ACMG Presents Talk Time Live is brought to you by Viewfinders Identity Search and Design, your choice for multimedia development for your brand. Visit VFISAD.com and find out how we can make your vision your reality.